Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 180. It is the week of July 23rd, 2013. I'd like to thank you for coming along. If you're a new listener, I appreciate you downloading the show and checking it out. This is a kind of a semi-monthly podcast on distance running, endurance events, my experiences, and other people's experiences that I come across. I like to try to share in the show and pass along some words of wisdom from time to time. If I ever come across any, I usually don't make up any myself. Usually I copy all that from other people, shamelessly plagiarize it. However, if you're a new listener, I do appreciate you downloading the show and coming along. And if you're a returning listener, thanks. I really do appreciate it. I got some good email bag stuff this week. I've also got a special feature. I have a first cousin who is a multiple Ironman, and this past weekend I had a chance to attend a intrafamilial book signing of a book that he wrote that I've mentioned once before on the show. It's called Against the Odds, and he spoke to. We had a big family reunion down in the Mississippi Delta this past weekend. It's all on my mom's side, pretty good sized gathering, and he was he talked about his book and what he did, what prompted him to write it, and some of his experiences, and then we all brought the books that we had bought, and he signed those, and I recorded the his talk, and so that's going to be in this week's show. I will advise you that you might need to cut the volume up a little bit. I used my wife's iPhone to record his talk. His name is John Pendergrass, and it didn't really work that well. It's just kind of, it was a little soft. I've tried to do some stuff to kind of normalize the volume. Next time I'll just bring my digital recorder, which does much better. However, the audio clip is in the show. It's about 25 minutes long. If you're not into triathlons, I think you'll still get something out of it because you got to keep in mind an Ironman does have a marathon in there after the 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike. And he doesn't just talk all about triathlon. He really kind of just talks about his experiences being on six different continents doing Ironmans. So that's going to be this part of the bulk of the show this week, and we'll get to that here in just a minute. And then after that, I'll do the email bag section of the show. And I did get some. I'm way behind on emails, so if you sent me an email and I haven't responded to you, you'll hear the response here in the podcast. But before I get into that, I do want to mention an interesting conversation I had with the husband of the veterinarian that we take our dog to. His kids are on my daughter's swim team, and we had a very interesting conversation the other day about what do you do with a horse when a horse dies? And his wife is all animals veterinarian, but does do, I guess, some horse work. And so I asked him, I said, well, what do you do, when a horse dies? He said, well, you bury it. And I asked him how you do that. And he said he's had to do it three times. He has, because they have horses, and then I think he's helped out, I guess, his wife's practice. He goes down and rents a front end loader. Where he lives, they've got some property. And he digs a big-ass hole, and then he puts the horse in it. And he said and then he buries it back. And it was the reason it was an interesting conversation is because I've just never really thought about what you do with the horse when a horse dies because it's so big. And he said there's really no nice way to put the horse in the hole. You just kind of push it in. He said it kind of depends on who's watching you when you do it. And he kind of said that. He also said that you can have a horse cremated if you want, and the ashes will take up quite a good size container. So I thought that was kind of an interesting conversation, and I'm not really sure why I put it in the podcast, but it was just kind of some food for thought. I remember I made a note of it in my little notebook I keep for when I get ideas for the show. That was kind of weird. Okay, that's enough of that. So yeah, big trip down south for a big family reunion, something we try to go to every year. It's hard to kind of go every other year, every third year sometimes. Shrimp boil, lots and lots of southern food, really good. And here's the funny thing. When we traveled down there, we spent a couple days in New Orleans before we drove over to where the family reunion was in Mississippi. The heat was really not that bad down there. You know, it was pretty hot down in Mississippi. You know, Virginia's pretty hot too. But it was hotter up here than it was down there. We had a magnificent few days down there. It was just not hot at all. I went for a couple runs. You know, can't complain. Can't complain at all. The only problem was the state park that we had the family reunion at had the lake drained because they were working on the dam. And that was kind of a bummer. We knew that going down there, but next year it should be better. Another kind of a weird thing about the state park is they had a lot of convicts doing all the work there. And there were alligators there. So other than that, it was a great weekend, and we got to hear John talk. So let me talk a little bit about what his book is. It's called Against the Odds, and I'm going to kind of read what the book is about from the randomhouse.com. That's who published it for him. Anyway, let me just talk. This is what the book is about. I've talked about it once before, but now I've got. We get to hear him talk about it. He's in his 60s. His name is John Pendergrass. Completing a triathlon at any age is a major achievement. Finishing an Ironman triathlon in your 60s is nothing short of inspirational. A true account of John Pendergrass's impossible goal of completing 6 Ironman triathlons on 6 continents, all while in his 60s. Against the Odds will shatter your preconceptions of what a man in his golden years can accomplish. For most people, their 60s is a time to slow down, take things easy, and reflect on a life well-lived. Not for Pendergrass. As his 60th birthday loomed, he longed for a challenge that would push him to his limits and drive him to achieve something that few people had ever done before. Pendergrass found his answer in the Ironman Triathlon, the world's most difficult endurance event, an intimidating 2.4-mile swim in open water, grueling 112-mile bike ride, exhausting 26.2-mile run, all in the same day, 140.6 miles nonstop, monumental task for men half his age. Against the Odds follows Pendergrass through each arduous step as he struggles against time, doubt, and his own physical limitations to arrive tired but victorious at the finish line. From the deserts of Arizona to the bush of South Africa, from the beaches of Brazil to the coasts of New Zealand, this journey chronicles not only the races themselves but also the breathtaking countries that host them. Told with modesty and humor, Against the Odds is a story of impressive drive and incredible courage that will inspire you to new heights many could only dream of reaching. Now that is a summary of the book. It's a great book. It's I don't know, a couple hundred pages long. It's got a foreword by Brent Favre. John Pendergrass is my first cousin. His mother and my mother were sisters. His mother's since passed, and he's a lot older than I am because my mom was the youngest of so many. And you know, he's been going to these family reunions for years. I always knew he was a distance runner, and then I remember hearing, and I think way back in one of the early episodes of the podcast, I talked about about him doing an Ironman in Brazil. And I didn't realize he had done, kept doing them. You know, every now and then we'd hear stories about what he'd done. Because he lives down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And now that's where Brett Favre is from. So he got Brett Favre to write a foreword for the book. And what follows is him talking to a gathering of our family about the book, about what a triathlon is, some of his experiences doing it. Some of the stuff is obviously basic information. But how often do you get to hear an author, you know, talk about the book that he wrote? And I got to ask him questions, and you might recognize my voice in a couple of the questions. So here's John Pendergrass talking about his book Against the Odds, and I'll have a link to the book and to how to purchase it on the in the show notes at ashlanddave.podbean.com, and hopefully you stick around and listen to the rest of the show. I'll have some more material for the podcast after his talk.
I had more support from my family on this book than you can imagine. I tell everyone if it wasn't for my family, the sales would be way down. Anyway, I want to talk briefly about my book, which is called Against the Odds. And I want to tell you what a triathlon is and what an Ironman triathlon is, how I came to do the 6 Ironman triathlons on 6 continents and write a book about it. And then I'll tell you real briefly how I trained for it, and then just go through quickly a typical trip that I would do. And anytime during my talk, stop me and ask me a question. We'll, of course, have questions when I get to the end, but this is certainly informal with your family, so be sure and interrupt me if you want to ask something. And if you have to get up and leave, get up and leave. Anyway, a triathlon is an event where you swim, bike, and run in that order. And the clock starts when you begin the swim. It continues as you go through the first transition zone onto the bike, continues through the bike, through the second transition zone, and then out to the run. And it finishes when you get to the end of the run. Triathlon is a relatively new sport. The first one was started in 1974, so the event hadn't been around that long. But it's gotten very popular. There's something like 500,000 people in the United States each year that do a triathlon. Now, most triathlons are relatively short, but the Ironman triathlon, which I wrote my book about, is the longest triathlon. It's a 2.4-mile swim, and then a 112-mile bike, and then a 26.2-mile run. They typically start at 7 in the morning, and you have to midnight, 17 hours later, to finish. The people who win them, the professional athletes, will usually finish it in something like 8 hours to 9 hours or so. And most of mine, I did it around 14 hours or 15 hours to give you an idea of the time involved. While there are thousands of regular triathlons around, there are only approximately 30 Ironman triathlons in the whole world. And each one is limited to something like 2,500 people, approximately. So there are not a lot of opportunities to do an Ironman triathlon. And most of the Ironman triathlons sell out immediately. They will typically open the registration for the following year, the day after the race, and literally in a matter of minutes or hours, it's filled up for the following year in most cases. Most of my life, I've been a runner, but when I got into my late 50s, I started doing triathlons. My running was getting slower and slower, and I decided I'd need also to maybe cross-train, so I got a bike. I did a little more biking and swimming, gradually got into them, and like most things, as time progresses, you want to see if you can do something that's a little bit more difficult, a little bit more challenging. So that was sort of the impetus for me to do my first Ironman triathlon. And I did my first one the year that I turned 60. As I mentioned, there are about 10 in the United States, and they're all very popular. And I didn't want to commit a full year in advance to doing an Ironman triathlon. Quite honestly, I wasn't sure if I could do it. I didn't want it hanging over my head for a full year. I know a lot of people that will sign up and they'll spend the whole year planning, training, and I just didn't want to go through that. That was too much of a burden to have to worry about it for a full year. So the first one that I did worked out very well for me convenience-wise. It was the Ironman Brazil. It was at a good time of year. It didn't fill up immediately like the American ones did, and I was able to register for it 3 months ahead of time. So I went and did that, and it worked out pretty well. I had a wonderful trip. The race was held in a part of Brazil called Florianópolis, which is a resort area in the southern part of the continent. Thank you. That's fine. And as like the Mortons know, it's that part of the world is really more European than it is Latin American. And southern Brazil, I guess, is much like Argentina. It's a area that has a European flavor. So I did the race and was successful there and went to Rio de Janeiro for a week or two and traveled around and had a wonderful time. Incidentally, most of the time when I'd go on these trips, I would go and do the race and then I'd go for another 2 or 3 weeks to visit the country that I was there. I sort of worked it all into a nice vacation trip. The following year, I had been watching the cycling on television a lot. This was toward the end of the time when Lance Armstrong did all of the tours to France, and I decided I wanted to try a race that had a lot of mountains or climbing in it. So I went to the Ironman Switzerland and did that, and it had a lot of mountains and climbing. And I got enough mountains to last me a lifetime. And going up the mountains isn't so hard as coming down them. That's really the frightening thing, because when you go down these mountains, you'll go 45 or 50 miles an hour, and you're just sitting on top of this bike holding on and hoping that you don't hit a bump or have a flat tire or something like that. Well, about a month after I got back from the Ironman Switzerland, Hurricane Katrina came. And I talk about that in the book. That sort of slowed things down for 2 or 3 months. And then maybe 3 months after the race, I had a bike accident, and I fell and broke my hip, and I broke my elbow, and I had to have a couple of surgeries for that. So that set me back, as you can imagine, a while. And maybe a year or so later, I was finally getting back up to snuff, and I was thinking about doing another Ironman triathlon, and I was hoping to go to New Zealand. When I was in the service, I had some good friends from New Zealand, and it was a country that I'd always wanted to visit. Well, about that time, I had one of these bold strokes of good luck that you have maybe once in your life. I had entered a contest online run by a travel company that takes people overseas to Ironman races. And I'd registered, and it, lo and behold, they picked my name out, and I won a free trip to the Ironman South Africa. So that was a fortunate thing, and I went there. Patricia incidentally went with me on that trip. And I came back the next year and went to New Zealand. Maybe a year or so after that, a couple of my friends at home wanted to do an Ironman triathlon. So the three of us decided to do the Ironman Arizona, which is out in Tempe, Arizona. And so we did that, and along about that time, I was speaking to a friend of mine in the office, and she was telling me she's done a lot of marathons in different countries, and she was telling me about all she had done. Of course, I was telling her what I had done. And she said, well, you've done an Ironman on 5 continents. You ought to try to do one on 6 continents. And I hadn't counted the continents. I really wasn't aware of that. So I had only one continent left. And that was Asia. Well, there was only one triathlon or one Ironman in Asia, and that was the Ironman China. So I got on the internet and started looking up the details of it, and it's held in an area called Hainan, a province called Hainan. And Hainan is an island about 60 miles long in the South China Sea, just maybe 100, it was like 120 miles from where I was stationed in Vietnam, when I was in Vietnam, at Da Nang Air Base. And I remember that when I was at Da Nang Air Base, I was a flight surgeon, and I flew 54 combat missions in the backseat of an F-4. And one of the things I had to do was to look out for Hainan, because whenever we would go that way, sometimes they had a MiG base, red Chinese MiGs that we had to watch. And some of you may not remember, old enough may not remember, Red China back then was a different country than it is today. It was much the same as North Korea is today, a closed, barbaric, militaristic society. And we weren't at war with them, but we certainly, they were big allies of the North Vietnamese. So I thought this, you know, it sounded like a good story, 6 Ironman triathlons on 6 continents in the 60s, and I told some people about it, and several people agreed, this is a pretty good story, you know, and gave me some positive feedback, but nothing came of it to speak of, and I sort of forgot about it. And then one day I was in my local library, and I picked up a book, as I usually do. I'll go to the new book section. And the book's called Halfway to Heaven. and it was written by a writer in Colorado. And he told the story of how he was in his 40s, out of shape, and his son got him to start climbing 14ers in Colorado. 14er is a 14,000-foot mountain, and there's something like 54 of them in the state of Colorado. And so the book is basically about him doing climbing 54 14ers in 1 year. But the thing about the book, it was told in an informative, sort of self-deprecating, humorous way. And as soon as I read it, I told myself I could write a book like that because my story I felt was equally as good. And before I read that book, I'd never once thought about writing the book. But once I read it, the idea was implanted in my head, and I started working on it the following summer. And it was, the story was, the outline of it is fairly simple. You tell what a triathlon is, how you train for it, and then you tell about your six trips. You know, it laid itself out real logically. And since I'd done it, it was pretty easy to write. You know, it didn't take me a real long time to write it. I wrote most of it one summer, but it's probably like all writers, I continuously was trying to improve it and make it better, make it more readable, and so on and so forth. And what I did during that period of time, I read an awful lot. And whenever I would read somebody who could say something in a particular good way, I'd sort of adapt it, you know, and modify it and change up my book a little bit. And I started sending out my proposals to different publishers. You know, for a nonfiction book, the way you get it published, so to speak, or hopefully get it published, is you send a proposal to publishers and agent. And what a proposal consists of basically is an outline of the book, a few sample chapters, a market analysis of, you know, other people who've written books like yours, your credentials, and that type of thing. And I probably sent it out, I don't know, somewhere between 50 and 75 people before, fortunately, I got someone who agreed to publish it. Let me tell you briefly what I do, because I get this question a lot. What kind of training did I do to prepare for it? I would go on a 12-week lead up to it, and I'd start at 12 weeks, and I'd build up to maybe 3 to 4 weeks out. I was doing the most that I would ever do, and then the last 2 or 3 weeks I'd taper off. And on my heavy weeks, I'd do maybe swim 3 times a week with one real long swim. I'd try to get a 4,200 yard swim, which is half the length of the Ironman swim. And then I'd ride my bike 2 or 3 times a week with maybe one real long bike ride of over 100 miles. I'd usually do that on a Saturday. And then I'd run, you know, maybe three times a week with one long run that I do on Sundays. And I eventually got that up to close to 20 miles. And then, you know, hopefully once you've done that, you ease back the last couple of weeks and you're well rested, and hopefully things work out for you. Most of the trips that I made, you know, these are places that are a long ways away. Usually from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed at your destination, from the time you wake up in Hattiesburg to the time you go to your bed in your destination is probably 48 hours or so. Just to give you an idea, to go from New York to Johannesburg is 18 hours, you know, and that's just, and China's far, New Zealand's far, you know, Brazil and Switzerland aren't too far, but they're all long trips. And one of the difficult things is you have to travel with your bicycle. You know, your bicycle is by far and away your most important piece of equipment, and it has to work. For you to be successful, you have to have a good bicycle, and you have to get it there. And it's awkward carrying it around. I always tell people, that it's like going on a vacation and taking your lawnmower on vacation. You know, it's something that's big and cumbersome. The airlines invariably will bang it up, or they'll lose it, or they, you know, it doesn't come out with the rest of the luggage. It's just stuck in some far corner of the airport, and you have to go find it, and then you have to get it, and you rush it through customs and get it to your connecting flight. But it's just one of those things you have to do in order to do the Ironman in a foreign country. The Ironman Triathlon is really, the whole thing is more like a 3 or 4 day journey at the minimum. You don't just show up that morning and do the race. There's several things involved before then. Of course, you register, you get your bike out and make sure it works. You check out the swim course, make sure you're oriented there. Sometimes go on the tour of the course, you know, go in a bus or a van or something just to ride around and see what the course looks like. And that can be very intimidating because, you know, these are long courses. The 112-mile bike may be a couple of loops or three loops, but still you have to, you know, it takes you several hours just to drive the course, and you're tired, your seat hurts, your legs are stiff, and all you've done is to sit in a car, and you wonder what it's going to be like when you actually have to do it in person. A couple of days before, you usually have a welcoming dinner that's quite nice, and wherever you're going, they usually feature the local talent, you know, Brazil or New Zealand or China. All of these countries are proud of their culture and are anxious to show it off. Eventually, the race morning comes, and usually I'm up like 4:30 or so, eat breakfast, go out, check my bike again. Then finally things get underway at 7 o'clock. And it's roughly, you know, a couple of thousand people that start at one time, all in the same body of water, trying to swim the 2.4 miles. And you swim, it's either in a lake or sometimes in the ocean or in a river, and you follow buoys and you do the 2.4 mile swim. And then you're off, change clothes, and out on with your bicycle. And it takes me, that distance takes me like 6.5 to 7 hours on a bicycle. And that's a long time. The first 3 or 4 hours usually aren't that bad. Every 10 miles or so, there's an aid station, and you exchange bottles to drink, and you get bananas or whatever, and you try to eat and keep yourself well hydrated and get as many calories down as possible. And usually, you know, I'll get to 80 miles or so, and then it just really gets to be a chore. You'll sit down and you say, well, I'm at 80 miles, and I'm going to really stay concentrated and get through this, and you'll bike and bike and bike, and you think, I must be at 90 miles, and you look at your odometer, and it says 81. You know? You're at that spot where the time just passes slowly. But eventually you get to the end, and then you're out. You know, it's hard when you've been on the bike that long, especially most of it in what's called the aero position. It's hard to sometimes sit up straight and run good. You've seen people on TV ride their bikes down like this. In what's called aero bars, and there's a logic to that. When you're riding a bike like that, you can go faster and you're out of the wind, there's less resistance, and it's really more comfortable to ride a bike once you get used to it down in sort of a crouched position than it is to sit upright like that. And for me, the run is by far and away the most difficult part of the event, and I usually manage 2 or 3 miles, and then it just turns into a question of surviving, you know, of getting run, walk till you get to the end. And this is really hard because by that time, your body's at the spot where you don't have any appetite. You can't take any kind of food or calories. You maybe stay hydrated. But it's just like running for 5-6 hours on an empty tank, you know, because you're out of energy, you're tired, but you just have to keep moving along as best you can. But eventually, and hopefully, you come to the end, and usually by that time it's like, 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, and I'll get my stuff, gather it back together, go back to the hotel, make a few phone calls, and usually I'm so tired that I still don't have an appetite by then. I can maybe, drink a half a beer or eat a few potato chips, but I'm just so tired that I cannot eat good, and I don't sleep good that first night either. And then around 7 in the morning, it never fails. Your appetite just returns with a vengeance, and you're just famished. Yeah. And I usually go down to the breakfast buffet and eat and eat and eat. And sometimes I'll come back and I'll clean my bike and pack it and go back and eat again. And for several days, you really are almost famished. You know, it's amazing how it works. Where I went and what I saw and so forth, I put, that's in the book. I could talk about that forever, but I'll stop now. And,
I have a question. Just how does the Ironman race handle the language differences, and how was the language barrier a challenge for you on each of the courses?
Usually they'll have it in the native tongue and also in English. It's always in English. English is the language everywhere. I mean, even places like China, even places that I've been to that aren't Ironman, English is the second language, and you can somehow get by. And then most of the time, that part of it, I had a travel agency, the one who sort of handles it. And they've got people, the local people that work with you, and they know what the problems are. So that works out okay. But sometimes, like I can remember in South Africa, running with some of the people there, and they were all talking in Afrikaans, which is a Dutch spinoff, and I couldn't understand the thing that they said.
Was there one particular Ironman that was more challenging, whether it be physical?
The one that I did not finish was the last one in China, and that was one of those freaks of nature where when I first got over there, it was like in the high 50s, but by race day, it was up over 100 degrees, and it was like real strong winds, and I sort of knew I was done before. I don't do good in heat, and it was so hot for that length of time. So that the weather and the hills are the thing.
Did you get nauseated?
I just got dehydrated. I can't stay hydrated for hour after hour, even though I stop and drink and drink and drink and drink and drink. I don't mind hills too much, but I hate the heat.
How did you get Brett Favre to do the
forward? His wife, I know his wife a little bit. She's a triathlete, but really it's a mutual friend got him to do it. Yeah.
He lives in Hattiesburg, right?
He lives in Hattiesburg, right. Right.
John, you mentioned training, swim, bike, run. In the training, did you ever put all three together?
I put the bike and run. I never did the swim. Transitioning from a swim to bike is always easy. There's no problem. Yeah. But going from a bike to a run is difficult because you get off and your legs just feel horrible, and it takes a while to go. And that's called a brick when you practice that, go from bike and run. But so I practice that. Yeah, that's important. I had to get off a bike and run a little bit. I'd practice that fairly regularly. And the other part, the swim, you swim to bike is usually no problem.
How does swimming the Hellespont compare to the Ironman swim?
Well, it was a lot harder because the water was so rough that they would have canceled. But in Turkey, that's a swim, not an Ironman swim, but another swim I did in Turkey, and it was so it was a lot harder because it's rougher.
John, can you talk about just how you do the transition? Do you try to do you take your time, or do you really try to get that nailed down so you do it quickly?
You know, I'll be honest, I try to do it fairly quick because, you never know when you'll need the time, especially somebody like me. So I do it reasonably quick, but I'm not like the people you see on TV. Some people, the professionals and the really good ones, actually have the shoes clipped into their bike and they run. I mean, I don't do that, but I try to be fairly expedient, yeah.
What's the next challenge for you?
I don't know. You know, I don't really have any coming up. Some of y'all know I hurt my knee about a month ago. I had my quadriceps tendon tore, and I had that fixed. It's been 5 weeks, and so I'm hoping it'll get well. I can do a little biking and swimming, but not much else now. You know, is anybody in here in our age range knows it gets the older you get, the harder it gets. Yeah, it really does. Now, incidentally, I brought plenty of these books. If anybody wants one, they're $15. And those of you, I know a lot of you bought them, and I'm most appreciative. I can't emphasize that enough.
Are there many women who enter Ironman?
They're about, I'd say, roughly 30%. So, yeah, there are a lot of, women do pretty good representation.
A couple times you mentioned when you got to a country you got sick, or at least once you mentioned.
Yeah, that was in China. I got sick, and you know, I got sick and had vomiting and diarrhea for a day or two before, and sort of got well. And I really try to avoid that. You know, I don't. I don't eat things the day or two before, like fruits and. Unwashed, uncooked. I don't eat uncooked things for the right before those 2 or 3 days to hopefully avoid that. And you know, I drink bottled water if there's any question at all of the water. You know.
Do they do the Ironman tattoos on site for people that finish?
A lot of people have those. You know.
Did you get one?
No, I didn't. You know, one interesting thing about writing a book, you write all this, and then you get the editor, you know, they cut a lot of it out. So I wrote a lot about tattoos, but they sort of cut a lot out. I wrote, incidentally, this is probably about 70,000 words, and I probably wrote like a little over 100,000. And it was easy to write. I mean, you know, it's just like, oh, y'all say you wrote my trip to England. You know, you say, I saw X, I saw Y, I saw Z. You know, it wasn't anything creative about it.
Well, the best part of the book for me was just like you'd be sitting right there at a reunion and telling the story like you're telling it now.
Uh-huh.
And that was, to me, the best part of it.
Well, you know, I sort of went that way early on for this reason. I think my publisher might have had a slightly different idea. They kept trying, and I kept fighting. They wanted to, what I call, hero it up, and I didn't want them to hero it up, you know, because there are a lot of people that do that faster, and I didn't. So I think they were expecting maybe more of a heroic book and then once you start writing it one way, you sort of that way, you know. And that's where I got the idea, like the guy whose book I read. His was that way. I mean, it was, he gave a lot of information, and he did it in a humorous fashion. He didn't take himself too seriously.
And did you, I know you mentioned that you had friends that went with you to Arizona. Only so?
Yeah.
Did you
Yeah, family members, sometime by myself. And Polly went to with me, and then Patricia, and some I went with friends, some I went with the travel group, you know.
Has there been any medical studies done on the participants in the crew?
I don't know. I'm not sure, you know.
It's the strain on the body.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good question. I always tell people it's not the optimal, healthy way to do it, to exercise, you know. It's obviously an overkill as far as getting fit, you know. Yeah, just like David does, it runs 100 kilometers. I mean, that's if you're designing how am I going to be most healthy, that wouldn't be what you do, you know. But...
Well, how much rest? I mean, how, before you went and toured the country after a race?
You know, surprisingly, the next day you feel better. You're stiff and sore, but I mean, within a day or so, you feel fine.
Really?
Yeah. Of course, you probably wouldn't be able to go out and run real good or exercise, but as far as just feeling, you feel good. So I usually spend the day after the race still where at the race site, and then I go on my tour again. You know. Yeah. But anybody else? Well, those are all good questions. I thank y'all. I really do.
Yeah, that's good. Did you do any formal training for swimming as far as technique of swimming?
You know, when I started triathlons, unlike all of us, we probably swam, but I never.
You at the lake.
Yeah. Y'all watch my video. So, but I never was on a swim team or coach. So, I swam, and I got some people to tell me, and then once I got a girl that sort of helped me a little bit. And that's the kind of thing. The good thing about this, a good thing about triathlon, a good thing about running, is you get out of it. You know, you can help yourself by doing it. You know, you get out of it what you put into it. And so if you don't know how to swim and you practice and you swim, you get people, you know, you can become a better swimmer. But along the way, I had different people help me. Once, before one of them, I had I actually hired somebody to help me once a week. You know, a young lady who was a swim coach, and she, you know, make different stuff. But then, you know, you swim and swim and swim and swim. Pretty soon, it's easy, a lot easier. And same thing with riding a bike. You know, once you get the mileage in, everything gets easier. You know.
And then you put it all together.
Yeah.
What kind of supplies did you take with you? I mean, you talked about gels, and I don't know what all runners.
Well,
did you have trouble getting them into certain countries?
No. You can't take those little cartridges to blow up your tires. You know, when you have a flat tire, you have a little CO2 cartridge. You can't carry them on the airplane, so you have to get them over there. When you have a flat tire, you have to change your own flat. But fortunately, I've never had a flat tire in an Ironman race. I've had a bunch in other races and had them in training. But I would carry, you know, a lot of times I'd take cookies, you know, like things like Fig Newtons and chocolate chip cookies, and I always carried gels. And then on the bike, you stop, and you don't stop, you slow down, and you get a fresh bottle of sports drink or water. Pick a banana or whatever. They have all kinds of stuff. And you can do that on a bike. When you get on a run, as I mentioned, your body shuts down and you can't eat, you know, even though you can't do it, you know. So that's what I carry, you know, gels, to answer your question, gels and cookies or sometimes you get power bars. You know. I think a lot of times, things like Fig Newtons or something like that are just as good as a power bar. You know, they're about the same stuff. I think those kind of sports bars are a marketing thing. You know.
I think you should write another book.
Well, I probably have to do some more things.
No, that's all been, you know, my publishers
is relatively small publisher. It's part of Random House, which is a big publisher, but they as far as marketing, they've done essentially nothing for me. It's all, so I've arranged the signings and things, you know. Yeah.
Have you enjoyed that experience?
Yeah, it is, you know, because I see people that I, in many cases, turn up that I hadn't seen in a long time, like people I knew in college or so I can Clarksdale somebody I knew that I actually rode to school with in the third grade, you know, that I had seen, you know, things like that. So there have been quite a few encounters like that, and I've really enjoyed them. And, you know, you enjoy it when people are interested in what you, and you're right. You know, it's the compliment, and you always enjoy it and appreciate it, you know. Yep. Well, I thank all you. Patricia, can you help me with the books if anybody wants them? I know some of y'all have them. Some of y'all have them up in the China, and I know I own Aunt Frankie one from Parkstown.
You sit right there?
Yeah, I'll sit up here. Okay. That's all right.
Great.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I thought that was pretty cool. My plan all along was to, I got his permission, of course, to record his talk. And I think if you've ever done a triathlon, you probably would find that interesting. I highly recommend the book, not only because John's is in my family, but I thought it was pretty good. It's very conversational and kind of simple in a way. He's an ophthalmologist by profession. And served in Vietnam. He's actually a flight surgeon in Vietnam. Pretty smart guy, but as you can tell, the reason I didn't tell you what he did for a living before he gave his talk is I didn't want you to have any preconceived notions. But as you can see, he's a pretty simple spoken person and very, very personal, very personable. And we really enjoyed the talk at all. So, John, thanks a lot. I told John I'd send him a link to the podcast. He wasn't sure how to find it, so I told him I would email him a link to it so he could listen to it. All right, let's get into the email bag section of the show, and then I will talk about my upcoming 50K. All right, I actually got quite a few emails to go over here. The reason being is that I'm kind of behind, I guess, on checking them. And again, if you've sent me an email and I haven't responded to you, it's certainly nothing personal whatsoever. It's only because I'm overloaded with emails these days with work and sometimes the podcast, and when I get home from work, it's hard for me to get on there and type on emails. And it's nothing personal. It's just the nature of the beast, I guess, with running a podcast. In some ways, it's almost a curse that I got more listeners than I can handle. it's like a curse that you want that you. Well, that didn't really come out right. Well, anyway, let's get to Jennifer. She wanted a copy of the checklist from listening back to podcast episode 175. So I sent that to her, and she's, I believe, up in the Montreal area. And hopefully that worked out for you, Jennifer. If so, please let me know. I would appreciate hearing back from you. I also heard from Christina over at the Lazy Bones Running blog, and haven't heard from her in a while. And she was listening to the podcast I had with Sandy, and she said it's very motivating to listen to runners talk about the races that she wants to go out and run a race. I think last check, I think with Christina, she might have been suffering from an injury, but I'm not sure. So hopefully, Christina, you'll be back up and running soon. Also heard from Dr. Smitty and Greg. I'm not even sure if I ever replied to yours, so I will make sure that I do that. And you did mention in your email about how you couldn't believe that I signed up for a 50K right after the summer. And yeah, you're absolutely right, because I'm nowhere near trained for it, but I'm going to still go out there and attempt it, and I'm going to talk about that right after the email bag section of the show. So appreciate the email, Greg. Heard from Sandy. She chimed in with a new product that she checked. That she tried back in June, called Carbo Pro. She said Ray Zahab and a few other ultra runners told her about it. It's all carbs. It's a powder that you mix in with water to get carbs and the calories. And she said she added some noon for flavor. Loved it. She said you never even know it's in the water, but it's a good way to get calories in during those long distances, which she said she has some trouble with. So, Sandy, let me know how that stuff worked out. I'd really really like to know. Also heard from David Williams. This is the Mechanicsville Dave, and we were trying to put together a Colonial 200. He was telling me about Colonial 200 relay team, and I was too late, and I did not get to be a part of that. Also heard from John Snuggs in reference to the Rocket City Marathon, and I'm not going to be able to do that, John, because I think I'm on call in December, or it just wasn't going to work, I think, with the weekends. But I wish you the best. And I did hear from somebody who, let me see which email that is. Somebody did chime in about the Rocket City Marathon. I might be able to get to that in a minute. Also heard from Tom Mueller. He is the mastercompetitor.blogspot.com fella. Excellent blog if you haven't checked it out. I've linked to it a few times over the length of the podcast, the time I've been doing the podcast. He's always got some excellent posts on there. And he was commenting on my desire to keep running the long distances when I was kind of just checking in with myself, doing an honest assessment with myself on, you know, do I really like the long distances or not. He says it gets harder as you get older. He says a few months ago he ran a 50K with his ultra buddy named Rob, who's done almost 700 ultras. He said he had a good time talking and jogging, but they were next to last in finishing. He says the promoter was a little put out waiting for us. There was not much left on the post-race goodie table. He said, so it goes. He thinks the 100 miles still holds an allure for him. It's all about finishing. He doesn't care about being back in the field. He likes the training aspects now more than the racing, the daily stuff, cycling, morning runs, working on strength training and bodyweight exercises. But he agreed that being ultra ready isn't really easy because it takes a lot of time and dedication, and sometimes it's hard to explain to a newbie about how it feels to become an oldie in the sport. He said few hang around very long. He says most of the faces CCs he saw in the past are gone now, and here he is still 30 years later still doing it. And thank you, Tom, for that email. I appreciate you taking the time to write that, and I'll respond back to you here soon when I can. Tom has got some very good insight on stuff. I don't really know how to describe it. What I would do is encourage you to go check out his blog at mastercompetitor.blogspot.com. If you can't figure that out, you can go to ashlanddave.podme.com and just scroll back probably 10 or 15 episodes, and you'll find a link to his blog. He's always got something neat on there. He's got pictures. Just a good blog altogether. Good insight. And Tom, as always, thanks for chiming in, for checking in with me. Also heard from Richard Yarp from the Woodlands, Texas. Richard is an original listener, all 100, I guess now 180 episodes. And he said he wanted to, he listened to 179. And he wanted to get a quick note off, see how much he liked it. He said it was kind of right. This is the one where I was running and recorded while I was running. He said that it was kind of reminiscent of the early episodes when I go out on a run and listen to what was going on with the training. You could hear the stuff in the background, like running with a friend, which is what he's always enjoyed about the podcast. He says he likes to hear what all's put out in the show, and I really appreciate Richard, you saying that. He said he almost choked when he heard me say I'm running a 50K in a month. And, I'm hoping some of my experience will help me with that, Richard. We'll see. I'm not really sure. Anyway, I appreciate the email, Richard. Always nice to hear from you, and I appreciate you taking the time. Also heard from Steve Buani, who was one of the fellows I interviewed a couple shows back. He was fundraising for Crohn's, and he did his half marathon back in June and finished in 1:55:05, which was several minutes under his two-hour goal. And, Steve, you know, well done, man. Excellent. He said he was a little annoyed because they delayed the start for some stragglers, and so there were 2,500 overhydrated people waiting at the start. No porta potties, which is a shame, and that's a big no-no for a race director. And he raised over $2,000 for his goal. And so, Steve, you know, congratulations. It's really awesome. He said everybody had their headphones on in the first half of the race, but then in the last 3 miles when he was really pushing to keep up his pace, everybody all of a sudden wanted to start talking that he was passing. So, yeah, that's typical, Steve. Well done. And hopefully you'll get out there and do another one, and we'll cross paths out at the same race someday. I heard from Neil Richard, and Neil has a podcast over at tk421.blogspot.com. He's got a very unique method of doing a podcast. It's kind of 1 mile at a time. And he said he also wishes that he knew the key to keeping motivated. He's long suffered from being lazy, driven to do something special. He feels the same pain when he hears me and others talk about struggle with motivation. He's gone through many roller coasters of super motivated, to barely being able to get out of bed. He doesn't know why it comes and goes in waves. You know, Richard, Neil, I agree with you. I think it's kind of like biorhythms. I think you can train really good for an event, and then you get on race day, and you just don't feel like doing it. Whereas other times your training's mediocre, and you go out on race day, and you just crush it. I think a lot of it has to do maybe with biorhythms. I don't know. But hopefully I will run into you on August 3rd up at the Dahlgren Heritage Trail 50K, and I'll be talking about that here in just a minute. Heard from Tim from Abulo Runs, and he says he really enjoyed the out-on-the-road format from the last podcast, which was episode 179. Sound of the trains and the greeting from the parish priest created a very good mental visual for him. He said he could picture himself along the tracks, feel the rush of air with the train. And he said he has done the Rocket City Marathon. He did it back in December of 2011. He said he'd be happy to share his thoughts about the race and the course. Feel free to pass my email on to them. Tim, I'm probably going to pass your email on to my friend John Snuggs, and he might have some questions. He does lots and lots of marathons, and I just can't get down there to do it this year. So, yeah, maybe I can try to get you guys hooked up by email. That'd be pretty cool. I appreciate that offer. I also heard from Bama Runner, who's done the Rocket City Marathon a couple times, and so he said I could also forward his email down to Snuggy Bear, so I'm going to do that too. So, Snuggs, if you're listening to this show, I've already forwarded these emails to you. But, yeah, email these guys back and ask them about the race. I'm sure they'll be happy to share it. So, anyway, and also heard from John. He says he's not going to be running the 50K, but he's happy to come out. And do I need any help, crew help or ride or anything? He said he talked to John King about it today. So here's the let me transition into the last part of the show here. Yeah, doing the Dahlgren 50K. Here it's called the Dahlgren. Let's see, I'm going to get the actual real name. It's called the Dahlgren Heritage Trail 50K. And it's on August 3rd up in King George County, which is, I don't know, about an hour and a half, maybe about an hour and a half north of here. Starts at 6:30 in the morning, so that's going to be a real, real early day. Same day, I've got relatives here from Italy who will be visiting. I signed up for the race before we knew they were coming to visit, and I'm going to go do the race anyway. I do not think I'm going to be able to finish, but I'm going to try to get to the turnaround point, which is 15 miles, and then reevaluate. I know I can get to the turnaround because I've already done some double-digit training runs. So I know I can do that just by pure determination. And at that point, I will reevaluate whether I'm going to finish it or not. I already paid the money. I want to go up there and see. Plus, I can't back out now because John King is going. And now if Snuggy Bear is going to go, maybe I can get him to wait on me at the turnaround if there's crew access or, you know, spectator access at that point, and make a decision at that point whether I'll continue or not. If I don't, that'll be the first time I will have a DNF, and that's frankly what I'm expecting, because there's just no way. I'm not, you know, 50K or even marathon trained. I'm not even 20-mile trained at this point. And, you know, I know I can walk a whole lot, but that's not the whole point. There are cutoffs. You have to be able to make the turnaround, which looks like it's at the 15.5-mile mark, in 4 hours. And, you know, I can't really do the math, but I think that's I can't even figure it out. There's the cutoffs here are fairly generous, so, you know, maybe I'll be okay. We'll see. But that's August 3rd. I think that's a Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. Saturday. And, yeah, wow. We'll see. I'll definitely have a race report on that. And maybe I'll even take my digital recorder. But really, the main reason that I want to go is because it's limited to 200 people, and I don't want to be a no-show and take up a spot for someone that maybe didn't get in. And, you know, that's probably just a step below that in being a bad race participant would be to, I guess, show up and not finish, you know. So, you know, being a no-show is a bad thing to do if it's a limited race and they had to cut it off. And then maybe not finishing would be the next worst thing. I don't know. We'll see. All right. Well, that's the podcast for this week. And I'll have another show probably after that race, because it's next weekend. I'll have a lot of material. And we'll see. Maybe it'll be in the DNF. Maybe it won't be. And my training has been such that it's been so lackadaisical that I'm going into the race with such low expectations of myself that sometimes that actually, the inverse happens and you end up performing well. Although I just don't think I have the glycogen stores in my leg muscles to handle the distance at this point, but we'll see. All right, well, it's a little bit longer podcast this time around, which is fine with me. I hope y'all enjoyed it. This is Ashton Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashton, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running, and don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all have a good one.